As it prepares for the 2016 filing season, the IRS is in recovery mode from last year. It managed to get its work done, but budget cuts and the resulting reductions in staff took their toll. I reviewed IRS customer service and what it's got to do when I spoke with national taxpayer advocate Nina Olson. She says the final numbers are in now and the picture didn't improve that much.
Basically, the numbers have been confirmed that the filing season phones and sort of correspondence have been the worst in recent memory, if not the history of the IRS. The IRS was only able to answer about 37% of the phone calls that came in to its numbers where people said they wanted to speak to a live assister. And even for the week that just ended September 12th, the level of service, that which is what we mean when we say people trying to get through to a live assister, was 33.7%, meaning two-thirds of the calls from people trying to get through to a live human being at the IRS were not able to get through, and they had to wait 50 minutes in order to get through.
And so in that season of the year, then, fall, you're getting the same percentages as in the height of the filing season, you know, that ends April 15th. What is that telling us?
Well, I mean, one thing is that there are different calls that are coming in at different times of the year. So the people who are calling now are folks that have received notices from the IRS, have concerns, are trying to respond to something the IRS itself has asked them. Or, and this is very important, they're folks who are trying to get through and make payment arrangements because we've gotten through processing all the returns. We know who owes some money and we're sending them letters. And the phone lines where people are actually, the dedicated number where folks are calling in to get an installment agreement, make arrangements to pay the federal government, that level of service is 37%. And you have to wait about 33 minutes. So for those folks, if they're calling and saying, I want to make payment arrangements, you've sent me a letter, and we aren't even picking up the phone to talk to them, what happens with those folks is that the IRS system just thinks they're not responding to us. And when we send you a balance due letter and you don't respond, then the machine just goes ahead and looks for sources that it can take money from, your bank accounts, your paycheck, things like that. And I keep trying to make the point, how will taxpayers feel when, you know, they're trying to get through to us, can't get through to us, and then the next time they hear from the IRS, it's that it's taking money out of your paycheck or out of your bank account.
So an unanswered call then is as if it never happened.
Yes. A lot of those calls are even getting what we call the famous courtesy disconnect right at the front of the call, which is that you basically get a recording saying, our phones are overloaded, please call back at another time, click.
Wow. But it is safe to say that the volume of calls for these people, or maybe it's some quarterly filers also you maybe could throw in, but is it safe to say the volume now is less than during the height of the season?
It is less than the filing season. And there are, the IRS hires seasonal employees to help us get through the filing season, and they're pretty much regular. They come in back almost every single year to help us get through the filing season. But those folks were let go between May and June of this year. And that's unusual because normally the IRS keeps those seasonals on to help answer the phones while the regular employees are working through notices or letters from taxpayers or resolving taxpayer concerns. And so since the IRS wasn't able to keep the seasonals on for the full summer, that's led to this level of service at this time of calls, even though the calls are fewer this time of year.
Well, I'm trying to understand this then. If the service was better in prior years and now they're back down to their normal staffing, that means possibly that their normal staffing is that much reduced from what it would be in a typical year before all of this budget problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of the levels of staffing should be going down because we're all, you know, the IRS is converting and taxpayers are converting to electronic filing. So some of the staffing in prior years was because you had to get through lots of paper, you know, income tax returns that had to be typed into the system and that sort of thing. So there's a reasonable amount of staffing that you would think when paper goes away, you don't need that many people processing paper. but not at these levels. You know, the reduction in staffing when I came into the IRS in 2014, there were about 104,000 employees and, you know, full-time employees, and now you're equivalents, and now you're down to about 86,000, and it will probably go lower. And there's just what you're really seeing on the taxpayer service side, the levels of service are attributable to not having enough human beings to pick up the volume of phone calls or process the amount of paper, you know, correspondence that we get from taxpayers.
We're speaking with Nina Olson, the National Taxpayer Advocate, and switching gears to something you just mentioned a moment ago, and that's electronic filing. The Special Inspector General for Tax Administration looked at the issue of whether the IRS is ready to take on individuals putting in their returns electronically. What's your finding there? Do you agree with what they found out, and what will that mean for possible future service to taxpayers?
Well, I think the IRS does, with its partners in the private sector processing these returns, it does a very good job of accepting electronic returns, and each year more and more taxpayers use a software package. Even if they don't file electronically, they use a software package to prepare their returns and print it out. And so I think, from the IRS's point of view, that is the best way to receive the information. You eliminate keystroke errors, either on the taxpayer side or on our side, processing information in. The challenge with that is, because it's so easy to electronically file, you get fraud, where people are posing as other taxpayers, or they're just making returns up out of whole cloth. And the IRS has a lot of filters that they've built up over the years to try to recognize a questionable return. And the problem with that is, you have two choices. You can either be absolutely strict, and you will then block not only the questionable returns, but you'll block legitimate returns, or you can be loose and let some money go out the door to people to whom they're not entitled to it. And, then you've got any place in between those two extremes where you could hit. And this year, the IRS erred on the stricter side, although the Inspector General always identifies how much money we've let go out the door, and that's appropriate. That's his role, to identify fraud, waste, and abuse. But what happened to taxpayers this year is, for one particular set of filters, which identify returns that look like they might be identity theft, this goes back to the phones, the 39% or 37% of those returns that were stopped were actually from legitimate taxpayers. So more than a third of those returns were legitimate returns. And when the taxpayers tried to call into the IRS, there were a couple weeks during the year where only 10% of the people calling in could get through. And, so you see this snowball effect. We're trying to protect refunds from going out to people to whom they're not entitled, and yet at the same time we're burdening people who are legitimately filing, and then when they try to tell us, wait, I am who I say I am, they can't get through on the phone call. So they have to wait and wait and wait and try and try and try to get through and get their refunds that they are entitled to.
It's almost like a house of mirrors. So
it is. I've been really encouraging them to take a deep look at, a very close look at, why the filters snagged so many legitimate people. And they are doing that, and I haven't heard back from them the results of their analysis, but I know that's going on right now. So they will try to jigger the filters and run some tests through them to make sure that they aren't snagging as many legitimate taxpayers. Last year, they only snagged 19% false positives. And, somewhere in there, you have to live with some number like that. That's what I mean about being on the continuum. But 37% is too high. So that's one thing they need to do. And then, they need to make the case to Congress as to why they need more staffing on this taxpayer service side. Because ultimately, you can't keep asking taxpayers to call and get a busy signal or call and get the courtesy disconnect. It's going to impact their willingness to comply with the tax laws at some point.
So it sounds like somebody needs to organize a phone campaign to Congress, maybe, and get the ear there.
Well, you know, I've been saying to people, you know, this is in your own best interest. I know the IRS is not an easy agency to love. It's taking your money and putting it toward things that may or may not impact you. That's sort of what we do in government. But it is not in anyone's interest for the IRS not to pick up the phone when taxpayers are calling. And people just need to speak up about that and say this is not okay, because you never know when you're going to be the person calling on the phone needing to get through to the IRS. And when you do, you're going to want the IRS to pick them up, pick it up, because you need to talk to them.
So as you look forward in the Office of the National Taxpayer Advocate to the year ahead, what will you be focusing on, say, this fall, and then as we go into the winter season, first of the year, back into a new filing season?
Well, we're looking at a lot of issues. Obviously, we're looking at what the IRS is doing about processing the identity theft returns and these filters, as I was speaking. And then this coming filing season, we not only have a second year of the Affordable Care Act in the terms of the premium tax credit and the individual mandate or individual shared responsibility payment, you know, that, and we're definitely looking at how the IRS will do there. But we have employer provisions of the Affordable Care Act coming into play. And the IRS will get 70 million more plus new pieces of information from employers and insurers and government agencies reporting on the insurance coverage of their employees. So that's a whole new pot of information that the IRS is going to get that it's going to have to process with the same staff or less.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.